It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff Jarvis is here. Stacey's got the day off, but we've got Matthew Ingram from the Columbia Journalism Review and Kevin Marks from IndieWeb to talk about the latest news from Google, a look at the new Pixel 2 XL, what's good, what's bad, what's indifferent, problems with the Pixel Book, besides the price, maybe, only for Jeff. And we'll talk about some very big acquisitions by Amazon for their Amazon Prime Video. Stay tuned. Twig is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 431, recorded Wednesday, November 15th, 2017. Mordor, she wrote. This Week in Google is literally brought to you by Sonic, Twit's 10 gigabit fiber internet service provider. Join Sonic's internet revolution as they bring fast, affordable internet, phone, and TV to homes and businesses all over California. Visit sonic.com/twit to sign up for service and receive your first month free. And by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your house. Go to ring.com/twig and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit. And by 23andme.com. Now through Thanksgiving, 23andMe Ancestry Service Kits are only $49 when you buy two or more. That's 50% off the regular kit price of $99. Make your family's Thanksgiving even more special this year. Visit 23andMe.com/twit. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we cover the latest in Google. And Stacey's not with us today, so you can just turn off the radio and go on about your business. There are a couple of people who will probably do that because they love Stacey so much. But Jeff Jarvis is here.
It takes two people to replace Stacey.
It does, and we have two people. Welcome, Jeff, professor of journalism at the City University of New York. He will be making his escape in 1 hour, so we're going
to... Yes, I apologize very much. I have to talk very fast to get a whole 2 hours of show into 1 hour of show so I can get off and get to the airport. So I really am sorry about that, but that's the way it is. Sorry.
Did you read that article? We'll talk about it in a second, about podcast listeners who listen super fast. Hey, that's Matthew Ingram. Congratulations. We haven't seen you since your new job. He's at the Columbia...
That's right, we haven't. Oh, yeah, Mazel.
Columbia Review of Journalism. Thank you. Journalism Review, CJR. Mm-hmm. And tell us about that. That's exciting.
Yeah, so it's a new job.
What are you doing?
Digital
there?
Writer. So I'm focusing on basically all things digital media, reinvention of news and journalism, the economic aspects, the social aspects, the political aspects. You so basically
be,
everything.
Be a little less breaking news, more a little more thoughtful.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so.
That's nice.
And actually, one of the big focuses is the power of the platforms.
Yes. So. Well, it's certainly one of the things we talk about here a lot these days. Mm. The platforms being the as Farhad Manjoo describes it, the frightful five.
Right.
And their baleful influence on American society and so forth. And
no,
so on.
No.
Jeff, well, no, but this is good. We have somebody to defend it. Also with us from
Microsoft PR did a very good job of getting themselves into the five there.
He sounds distant. You sound distant. Yes.
I'm in Amsterdam.
Oh, you are distant. There's Kevin Marks, IndieWeb.org. He's at a medical devices conference.
Medical data conference.
Oh, there is a difference, isn't there?
Oh, yes.
Give Kevin a little more volume because he's where are you, at a pub?
He's riding it because you get the bar in the background.
Yeah.
He's in a pub,
I'm in the hotel bar because the Wi-Fi in my room is not good.
This is good. We're happy. It looks fine.
Downstairs.
Looks nice. Jeff, if you're getting, we're getting a little buzzing on you. So if you, let's just take care of some of the audio issues here real quickly. Just, I think unplug and replug will probably do it.
Oh, I know. I had my phone on top of it.
Oh, don't put your phone on top of it.
Uh-huh.
You're rocking, as the kids will say, you're rocking the Pixel 2 XL. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the last two phones, I've liked them. And the last Pixel, I ended up liking as time went on a lot more. I think this will be the same. You know, is it worth $1,000 to switch? No, because I'm an insane person.
I like the bigger, the It's not completely bezel-less, but the
which I like better. I like the fact that it's just slightly bezeled. Yeah,
slightly bezeled.
It's not too big.
You know, when you compare it to so this is the iPhone 10, which is the same, roughly the same size screen. Let me unlock it. Face ID, I've come to the conclusion, is an interesting idea, but not 100%. And this is the same size screen, but a smaller form factor. Yeah.
Wow.
But what I have to say, I've taken the case off of the iPhone 10, which is, of course, living very dangerously because, A, it's glass, B, it's slippery, and C, it costs a phenomenal amount of money to fix. And I did not buy Apple Care Plus because I don't know why. I just didn't. But it is such a jewel. And, you know, this is stainless steel. The screen is easily the best screen on the market, even besting the Note 8. And easily besting the Pixel, it really feels like a work of a jewelry in your hand. But iOS is not nearly as functional. And by the way, I did a camera comparison. I think I like the Pixel's camera a lot better.
Oh,
really?
Well, I'll just show you. I mean, look, this is far from a scientific survey, but I'll let you pick. I have two pictures. Let me turn motion off. So this is of our backyard on an overcast day, lots of greenery. This is one, and this is two. I guess I don't even have to ask you which you prefer.
I feel like I'm at the eye doctor's.
This is one or two. Yeah. So this is the iPhone, and this is a problem that the iPhone 10 has exhibited, which is blowing out highlights. See the sky?
The sky's all blown out.
You could barely see it. This is the Pixel, same exact.
Way better.
Yeah. I think the detail's better. I think the color's better. And certainly the highlights, the exposure is better.
Wow.
The HDR has been really good on the Pixel 1 that I've got. So, and the Pixel 2, they're supposed to do even better by going to the camera sensor as well.
Yeah, it's automatic HDR. And so Apple has two sensors, and they do use both sensors for things like this. But Google has the weird split pixel, which it could do dual exposures, even so at the same pixel. So it's a very tiny distance apart. They are able to do dual exposures. And I think that, in fact, and I think I'm not alone in this. I think that the Pixel 2 phone camera is better than the iPhone 10 camera. iPhone 10's fine. It has some other nice little things it does, like the portrait lighting and stuff. Google does do some portrait stuff. But I think it disappoints me because I like carrying. I like the physical feel of carrying the iPhone 10, but I am less than enamored. Now, there's another problem, which people have been talking about. The selfies are too good on the on the iPhone 10. I need better makeup. And a lot of people are complaining about this because there's just way too much. This is horrible. This is a nightmare. This is like I never look so bad, but that's exactly what I look like. That's the problem. So you can't have a camera that's too good. This is the iPhone 10 because it's using that, you know, that face recognition camera. And God, I hate it. Portrait mode, see, it's blurred in the background. Although it's nice. It gave me a little halo, which I do appreciate. So thank you, iPhone, for that. Anyway.
That's the key light behind you.
I am not. Jeff, you're not. You have no screen burn in, right?
No, I don't. I thought I did. I don't.
If you put this side by side with the Note 8 or the iPhone 10, it isn't as good a screen. But stand by itself, it's fine.
We also did something really stupid on the Android launcher on this phone. It has a on the main screen, it throws like a 10% screen over it, fog over it.
Yeah.
So I looked at the two phones in the screen and said, "Oh my God, this is just awful." It wasn't the screen. It was the way they designed the launcher. And then the second problem was that then if you go and look at the app tray or you swipe right to get the Google News stuff, the background is there like 5%. It's a 95% screen. And so I thought I had burn-in because I'm stupid, and I didn't. But it in either case, it's a bad aesthetic. It's a very bad aesthetic. It doesn't let any vibrancy stand out. It's dumb.
Yeah.
I have to admit, I set my screen background to pure black. Because with an OLED, that just saves you battery.
It looks much better.
It stops all those sort of weird translucency things happening. And
if you want a screen to look good, plus it also hides the fact that you've got these bezels because they're black as well. So it just looks like a contiguous.
That also helps, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you on that.
I got white business for,
Yeah. Well, that it doesn't help you at all with that. what I'm saying is, despite all the negative information about the Pixel 2 XL, I've been very happy with it. I don't have a problem with the screen.
Yeah,
and
no,
I think
I'm good.
It is the best Android out there. Now, the Note 8 screen is much better, but I think this is a really, I like it. It's big. It's funny. It feels big in the hand compared to the iPhone X. But
So since I always have to return something, I'm about to cancel the Pixel Buds.
Yeah. Well, interesting reviews, pro and con.
Yeah.
Yes. But the one thing that bothers me most is with my headsets, I go back and forth between my tablet, my laptop, and my phone.
Oh, and you can't do that with the Pixel Buds.
No, you can. It only pairs to one at a time, and then you have to go reset it and repair every damn time. That's incredibly awful.
And they didn't tell us that.
No, they didn't tell us that. That's just awful design.
Which bothers me quite a bit.
I'm guessing it's because it's the new instant easy pairing, and they're going to say it's easy to pair, but it's only easy to pair if you have a Pixel A. B, when I want to switch over to my... you have to put them back in the case. You have to reset, according to the reviews. You have to repair.
Yeah, that's not good.
What?
No way. No
Every
way.
Every time?
Every
that's
time.
That's insane.
Yes.
So put them back in the case.
Yes, and people complain about the case, too. You need a design degree to figure out how to get back in the case.
They actually have a video. They have a video to show you how to get in the case.
Jesus.
Well, and this is the most negative review I read in Gizmodo from Adam Clark Estes. Google's Pixel Buds aren't even close to being good.
Because that Wired one said that the sound was really good. It's just some of the human factors.
Because they were just too hard to use.
Yeah, and so this is going to be...
They sounded better than the iPod ones, but...
That's what the Wired review said, which puzzled me. The Wired loved the sound. They said it was the best sound they'd ever heard. Gizmodo said it was terrible. So part of it is they rest on the ear. They don't actually...
Which drives me nuts. I can't stand
that. Well, it's the trade-off. Do you want isolation or not? I've got Sennheiser ones in, which are very isolating at the moment, and that works when I'm doing this. If I'm cycling, I want the low isolation.
That's true.
One, so it's a trade-off.
That's true. Although the Wired review, I think it was the Wired review from David Pierce, said that they felt like they were falling out all the time, although they were quite secure, but they felt like that. Is that what you're... Well,
that's the problem I have with every single pod. I've got to have stick them in, or I have to something that goes over the ear as an option.
Yeah,
I got weird ears.
Yeah,
I'm the same. Mine, I can't use lots of the headphones. I can't use because they either fall out or they hurt if I wear them too long.
Well, my Pixel Buds come on Friday. I can't cancel them because I got to review them. I'll give you my impressions next week. But I think that this is Google's. You know, when the Pixel came out last year, everybody said, well, Google was rushed. The normal 2-year cycle of developing a phone, they only had 10 months. So wait till the next one. That's going to be the one that really shows off Google's stuff. And I think this is not exactly a great launch for the Pixel 2 or the
No, it's Pixel a better Plus. Device than it is a launch.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about getting them, but if you have to put them back in the case, reset them.
Isn't that ridiculous?
Just to pair with a new, it's crazy.
And it's not a Bluetooth requirement. I have my my Apple AirPods are paired to everything.
Yeah.
Well, I will get them, and I can show you the translation and all that stuff, and then you can decide.
Try it out.
Yeah. Another state attorney general going after Google. Josh Hawley, attorney general of Missouri. Although, interesting. looks like Peter Thiel gave him $300,000 for his campaign.
What a coincidence.
We've seen this happen before. Apparently, states' attorneys general are easy to sway.
Yeah. Gawker was just an amuse-bouche for Thiel. Now he's got to go after Google.
I think Google has slightly deeper pockets than Google.
Yeah, but the point is that effectively, we've seen this over and over again. You can effectively bribe state attorneys general by giving them campaign cash, and then they will do your bidding and go after who you want. In this case, an antitrust investigation against Google.
You can do it 50 times over.
I don't think this guy needed any bribing.
Maybe not.
You can tell. I think he sees it as an obvious gambit to get publicity. I mean, he's clearly looking to move up.
Yeah. It's a virtuous circle.
Yeah, but it may not be a bribe.
You get campaign money and you get notoriety. It's a win-win all around.
Right. The idea that Missouri is going to lead some kind of regulatory charge against Google is farcical, but it doesn't hurt him to launch the bid, right? Why not? Then he looks like a good guy.
He cites the European Union case against Google for favoring their own product and search results. Of course, the EU got a massive fine against Google. His subpoena, according to Bloomberg Technology, is the only publicly disclosed government antitrust probe against Google in the U.S. since the FTC picked up then dropped. Remember that case in 2013.
That was 2012, I think.
Yeah.
2013.
Yeah. Now, why is Thiel have it in for Google? Do you think?
That's a good question, because you'd think that he'd be Silicon Valley is eating itself right now. You have Thiel went after Google, Parker went after Facebook.
Sean Parker went after Facebook. Was nasty about Facebook.
Yeah. And then what's his name? The investor also went after Facebook. What's his name?
Did we talk about Sean Parker? Yeah, we did last week, I think.
We did?
Well, I can't remember. We talked about it on Twitter.
Didn't this is all your right. life. You're talking about it in five shows.
I know, but that's all right. That's all right. It's part of that larger Frightful Five conversation that you hate so much, Jeff.
But I actually think, even though Missouri... Go ahead, Kevin.
It's the what's shaping what we read conversation. That's what Parker was saying. He was reading into that. And there are a lot of people talking about that in the problems.
He did Jeff's favorite moral panic line, though. God only knows what it's doing to our children.
This is Sean Parker, the Mr. Rogers of Silicon Valley.
Think of the children.
I thought it was interesting he was talking about it from the point of view of hacking attention and looking at the way that people respond and then basically hacking that in order to get people to share things and engage as much as possible.
And we know that he said we did it. We know we did it. We intentionally did it. We knew what we were doing.
Right. And it worked.
And it works. And we know that Facebook does this. This is in the Axios event.
Everybody does.
And then Roger McNamee also went after them.
Oh, Roger McNamee. Well, Roger hates Google. Roger's always hated Google.
I put it on the rundown. I can't find it now. But on The Guardian, how Facebook and Google threaten public health and democracy.
Yeah. Roger's been saying this for years.
He's on record as regretting investing.
I'm sure he regrets his yacht too. Yeah.
He made a lot of money on Facebook.
Yeah, and I'm sure Sean Parker, it's easy for Sean Parker to criticize what Facebook did now that he's a billionaire.
Yeah. He says, and this is not unfair, if we're trying to, and this is a Roger McNamee, who, by the way, mostly now devotes his time to his rock band, Moon Alice.
His band.
Yeah. If you're trying to maintain attention, if you're fighting for a share of 24 hours in people's lives, the big issue is you have to keep escalating. Well, that's true. Turns out the way you keep people's attention is either you scare them or you make them angry. That's a little reductionist, but it is true that stirring emotions is a great way to engage people.
But Silicon Valley got accused of turning us all into robots and machines and took the humanity out. So now a company comes along that has humanity in it, and now it's accused of just being terrible. And emotions are part of relationships. Of course it has emotions in it. Being excited, being happy, laughing. This is what the entirety of Hollywood does, is emotions.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I was going to say that's fine as long as you don't use it with an intent to manipulate, but I guess all storytelling is ultimately manipulation. Yeah.
And 60 Minutes. Yeah. And, the entire media industry is built. I just love how media goes after an industry that does it better than it does. That's all.
Well, and it
doesn't recognize.
I think that's the point, though, Jeff. And we talked about these tools are now weaponized. Go ahead, Kevin.
Did you cover James Bridle's thing previously?
Yes, we did. We spent a lot of time last week.
Yeah,
he's the guy who wrote the Medium piece about these weird YouTube videos that are essentially algorithmically generated to get revenue by.
And it worked.
And it worked. And by the way, Google's
going to.
Google's going to do
something about it. Yeah,
yeah.
Which is because Bridle wrote something. Yeah. But Bridle's entire oeuvre is looking at the weird things that computers do with technology and art. So he was primed to find that stuff. But But, you know, that piece was genuinely surprising.
It was. And we played some of those videos, and they were god-awful.
It was fascinating because it's content that's produced by computers for computers. So it's produced specifically to tag into specific keywords. It has no... It doesn't matter what the content is. It just matters
like
that it matches certain search keywords.
Right. The weird iPhone covers, Bridal shows those.
Or keep calm and stay racist. Or, you know, it's just algorithms produce the content and then human beings consume it.
Yeah, the difference is these were aimed at children who are not being monitored while they're mashing the next button. Pre-verbal
children.
Yeah. Which is the spooky.
Some of the cartoons we watched when I was a kid were pretty weird.
Roadrunner was creepy as hell.
It wasn't
quite itchy and scratchy, but
SpongeBob SquarePants is pretty darn weird.
All the BBC TV stuff when I was in was definitely made by people on drugs. It was
Teletubbies. Oh, yeah. Come on, really?
I'm talking Magic Roundabout, Fingerballs.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, I think we can thank LSD for really making the culture what it is.
So computers are just recreating that for our kids.
So McNamee wrote an opinion piece in USA Today in August, a couple of months ago. He says, I invested
There's a more recent one.
Is there more recent?
In The Guardian, okay. I'll put it up there, too.
But it's the same thrust. I invested early in Google and Facebook. Now they terrify me. But I can remember Roger talking about this years ago, actually. He's been talking about he's been a little disenchanted with Google for some time. Yeah.
Definitely.
How much did he make?
I don't know. He ran the Elevation Partners. That was Bono's venture fund.
Yeah, they lost a fortune on Forbes, I think.
Well, and remember Palm?
Yeah.
He took a lot of the money that they made and put it into Palm right when it tanked.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
That's bad decision.
Bad choice.
I just put the new piece in the chat.
Well, we all make mistakes.
Here's the, there it is. How Facebook, same thing. Threaten public health and democracy. I don't know. I mean, it seems like this is something, it's been an ongoing conversation for some months now on the show.
I do think it's interesting. I was going to say about the Missouri guy. So maybe he's not going to have an impact. But I think something that Google is probably paying attention to quite closely, and probably Facebook, is there is a kind of leakage of EU arguments into the U.S. There are a number of groups in the U.S. that are deliberately taking the same tack as the EU. There's Open Markets, which used to be part of, I think, the New America Foundation or whatever, and there was a controversy because they left and Google may or may not have applied some pressure, but the rhetoric is exactly the same as it was in the EU. It's exactly the same as the commissioners were using. These companies are too big. They have too much influence. They need to be regulated. And I'm sure that there's lots of fear in Google and Facebook that some of that is going to have an impact on Congress.
For a moment, let's just visit Kevin Mark's childhood. This is called Finger Bobs.
Oh my.
Yuffie lips a finger.
This is as weird as those YouTube videos.
Oh, this is really
weird. See, you had Sesame Street, you had this.
That's wrong. Okay. That's just wrong.
Oh, that is.
So for people listening, there's a guy, by the way, wearing a very artsy scarf.
Yeah, I like the scarf.
Yeah, making puppets that fit onto his forefinger.
With gloves.
I like the sort of 18th century kind of song style in the background.
Little finger.
I'm not sure I'd let him in a mall.
Oh, Lord, this is weird. Okay.
Yeah.
A little weird.
I did want to mention one thing, and I'm going to find some silver lining in this dark cloud some way or another. So the Attorney General, Missouri Attorney General, goes after Google. One day later, our free press, in the form of Bloomberg, points out that he got $300,000 from Peter Thiel. Increasingly, we're seeing this where corruption, and there's god-awful amount of it going on, is outed almost right away. And this is, of course, why people, you know, certain people hate the free press, but why we should be very grateful that we have this free press, because they're not, I think for the people are not getting, whether it's Harvey Weinstein or, certain other people in the White House, they're not getting away with stuff like they used to, right?
Agreed.
I hope that's the case. We don't know.
I feel pretty good about
Weinstein?
It. I say, yeah, I do too. It's Steen, I think, but anyway, okay. Yeah, I don't know what it's right. Who cares?
Weinstein would be Weinstein. The
right pronunciation. Harvey Weinstein. But he manages to
pronounce the two things with different vowels.
It takes less than one news cycle for there must be, and you probably cover this, Matthew, at CJR, but there must be armies now of investigative reporters just as soon as something happens going, all right, where's the money? And that's great.
I hope so.
I love it.
But also where Peter Thiel is involved, there are masses of people getting on the phone to tell you everything bad about
some
Peter
of this
Thiel.
Is leaking. Yeah,
one
some
of the
this
most
leaks.
Hated men, right. Probably in Silicon Valley.
It's also let's praise the FEC, the Federal Election Commission, and the transparency laws, the Sunshine Laws in this country that require all campaign contributions at least to be publicly recorded, if not limited in any way. At least we know who gave the money. That's the good news.
That's the same organization that everyone wants to regulate. Google and Facebook's election ads.
Right, right.
Yeah. You also have
which they have not done.
Right.
Well, and my argument with Facebook especially, and I've said this in the show prior weeks, is that they should be setting an entirely new aggressive standard in transparency. They should go beyond anyone's expectations in transparency. And that's their opportunity. They're still playing defense. They've got to play moral offense.
Well, and Facebook...
They're not doing it.
Actually, to be fair, Facebook has done pretty well.
They've got a long way, but they've been behind. I was surprised
they went as far as they did.
But by the way, sometimes Bloomberg literally follows the money. Here's our Secretary of the Treasury.
I love this.
Steve Mnuchin.
right. Great photos.
Ben Schwartz with his gloss on this is quite off. Awesome. Steve Mnuchin down at the Mint picking up his staff's Christmas bonus. And it's Mnuchin and his model wife, Louise Linton, holding up an uncut page of dollar bills at the Mint.
John Avrosis is asking, or Aravosis is asking for a caption contest. And my favorite is, dear, we've found our new wallpaper.
Wow.
What is that, dollar bills? I mean, this guy's cheap.
Yeah.
You know, that's cheap. What the heck?
Wads of cash at Christmas feast.
Who was it? Wasn't it, didn't Steve... Wozniak used to carry around
$2
sheets of bills.
Yeah, in fact, I have pictures of him.
Yeah.
Doing this
perforated.
Well, he would do a variety of things. He would It turns out, who knew that you can buy
sheets
of $2 bills.
Yeah,
and so he would actually just sometimes carry the sheets, and when somebody asked for money, he'd take a scissors.
He would cut it
and cut it and give it to them.
Yeah.
And then
it's legal tender.
He would say things that were weird, intentionally hoping that these people would call the Secret Service on him, saying he's passing bad money. Then he got them made up into a pad so he could tear them off.
Yeah.
I love Woz. I love Woz. All right, let's take a little break. This is fun. I'm having a good time. I hope you are, too. We've got the return of Matthew Ingram, now at his new gig at the Columbia Journalism Review. Matthew I, M-A-T-H-E-W-I, 1-T, on the Twitter.
One T.
Kevin Marks, I'm just going to pretend you're in your local pub, if you don't mind.
It was one plane ride from North Yorkshire to Amsterdam. But
it's probably really easy to get to Amsterdam for you, isn't it? It's like a...
There's a local airport. This is like the smallest airport in the UK, but it flies to Amsterdam. So I go to a conference in Amsterdam, it's absolutely perfect.
Now I know why you live
else,
there.
It's hard work.
Yeah, you live in the moors because it's easy.
$200, probably.
Yeah, but there's no bathroom.
It has a train station that the trains don't stop at.
Nice. Those are handy.
I was like, I can get the train there. Oh, no, it doesn't actually stop there.
That's
okay.
So strange. That is so funny. Let's take a break. Our show today brought to you. Oh, and by I should have mentioned Jeff Jarvis. I didn't mean to leave you out. Jeff Jarvis is also your Buzz Machine Duck. Oh, that's okay. Buzz Machine Duck. That's all right. I'm here.
I'll wake up.
No, I'm really glad that you're here, Jeff, because you are, I think, a very good balance to all. It's very easy to say the Frightful Five and they're, you know, and you're a good balance to this. Because and I've been all week reminding myself of the benefits we get from technology and these companies. I mean,
you but know. I mean, The Guardian, which is a paper I've loved, has gone full techno panic. And I today I was at the Foursquare conference, which is all off the record. I'm not supposed to say anything, but suffice it to say this: there were conservative executives on stage wanting regulation of Google and Facebook.
Yeah,
and this is scary. And the technology people who were there, you know, they're still a little clueless. Like, oh, well, you don't like us?
Yeah.
Well, what do we do? And though I tend to agree with them, I argue this is where Matthew, you're right. Facebook went a big step on this, but they've got to shock us with their virtue. They've got to go. They got to get so far ahead of this, and they're still playing catch up.
There's a wave of regulation coming.
Oh, I'm afraid so.
There's a wave,
and as Eric Schmidt always says, you know, okay, what do you want government to do? Do you want government to hold all your data?
right.
You know, you want government to decide how we do our job? Do you want what do you want? What does it mean to say that the government does this?
That's what
a part of what. I mean, Google and Facebook are going to have to say, they can't just keep saying like they did in front of Congress, it's really complicated to do what you're saying, to track down Russians who are buying election ads. That answer is not going to fly. It didn't
they
fly
also,
in
you're
front
right,
of the Senate.
Right.
It didn't fly in front of Congress. It's not going to buy them anything but time. And
you know, the other problem, sorry, Matthew. The other problem is that when Congress says something stupid, they're so cowed they can't say that's dumb. You know, and Al Franken and I like, but the whole, how did you not see the ads in rubles? Because it wasn't the signal we were looking for. You know,
no, it's far.
Hey, come on,
but,
Senator.
I mean,
but they can't say it because
great,
they're cowed.
But he's great with the soundbite. And you know, as and I know, I went and sat and through those hearings, like 7 hours of Senate and congressional hearings. A lot of it is theater, right? There,
yeah,
and
feels
Al
very
Franken
like
understands a soundbite.
Yeah.
All right, so I interrupted you, Leo. I took you off. You were going to go and make some money.
We're
going to go on a break.
Actually, I was going to thank our great sponsors, Sonic, who literally bring you this show on our 10 gigabit fiber internet. They are our service provider, and they ought to be yours if you're lucky enough to live in Northern California. Sonic is bringing internet freedom to all with unlimited, uncapped internet. They stand up for privacy. They have local customer support. And their pricing, well, it just shows that the other guys are raking you over the coals. Here's what you get with Sonic Internet. 15 email accounts, a gigabyte of storage, personal web hosting, a new domain name of your very own choosing, a fax line service, a home phone connection with unlimited local and long distance calling. It's a real phone, too. You can port your phone number to it. And speeds up to 1,000 megabits per second. Gigabit. For $40 a month. How much do you pay those other guys? For service, it's not as good. The service is capped. And those other guys don't stand up for your privacy. Sonic does. I love Sonic. I hope you can get it. If not, I feel bad about doing this ad, but at least you know there's something better possible, right? That's the point. Sonic.com/twit. Receive your first month of Sonic Internet phone service for free, plus bundle it with Dish. You'll save $120 on your Sonic bill. Sonic.com/twit. Well, there's one fewer member of the Ink-Stained Wretch Society, the Fourth Estate. Are they the fifth or the Fourth Estate? Who's the Fifth Estate?
They're the fourth. I think Google and Facebook and
they're the fifth
and
estate.
The fifth
now
estate,
we finally have a fifth estate.
There you go, the fifth estate.
The fifth estate. The fourth estate is losing a proud member. Nick Bilton is columnist turned screenwriter, just sold his screenplay, The Bunker. I guess he's still at Vanity Fair, but he's going to be doing a movie on Amazon Studios. It follows a group of billionaires who seeks luxury. Seek shelter in a luxurious underground bunker after a devastating attack cripples America. We've seen these are real bunkers, and the rich own many of them. One of them is a converted nuclear missile silo in the Midwest that's been turned into million-dollar condominiums with their own air supply, medical facilities. And I think it's a great starting point for a show. As their worst instincts come to the surface, they realize it takes more than money to survive. So good going.
Sounds like a Black Mirror episode.
I know. Good going, Nick. I'm very...
Nick's last book should have been made into a movie. And unfortunately, I don't think it was being based on his book. It was great.
American Kingpin has been optioned by Joel and Ethan Coen.
Oh, it has. Okay, yeah. Good.
Really?
And he's got Hatchet and Twitter has been, which is his Twitter story. American Kingpin was the Silk Road story about what's his name that was arrested for running the dark web black market in drugs. His book about Twitter, Hatching Twitter, has been optioned by Lionsgate for television.
You know, I often don't agree with Nick about things, but he's a hell of a storyteller.
He is, and I love him.
And he did a great job.
It just means we're never getting him on our shows again. But anyway, I like seeing him success. It's really great. Yeah.
Mazel tov.
Mazel tov, Nick Bilton. Let's see.
Cory Doctorow is when Sisamins ruled the Earth one.
When they make that into a TV show, I will watch.
That will be cool.
Cory deserves that success. He really does.
He does.
He has enough things that could be filmed. He should get on that.
Oh, yeah.
He'll be like Philip K. Dick, I'm sad to say, who wasn't discovered until after his death, and then whose short stories were the foundation for pretty much every science fiction movie you ever loved. Yeah.
They are filming Good Omens.
Nearly as crazy as Phil, though.
Very cool.
Say again, Kevin, what are they filming?
Good Omens.
Oh, well, that's a Neil Gaiman. But Neil's done all right for himself.
Yeah.
No, it's Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett. They wrote a book together before they were famous, which is like this. And if you haven't read it, you have to read it.
I didn't realize Good Omens was that old. I love it. So it was before either of them was famous.
I think Pratchett had written like the first three.
He'd already done Discworld by
then.
That
took off.
Yeah.
And Gaiman was still doing comics, so he was kind of famous. But you know, neither of them had broken out as
famous for Sandman. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there,
I think. Yeah, it might even predate Sandman. I think it was when he's doing other stuff, but yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, American Gods was an interesting adaptation, very faithful to the book, but not a great TV show on Stars. So
I think it worked, but...
It was not mass appeal. I think it was very dark and difficult for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I liked it.
I thought it was really good.
Yeah.
I think they managed to preserve... Well, the thing is, the challenge always was you had to make a film of it, and... You know, Gaiman's written about this at length when they were trying to auction Sandman and then squish it down to an hour and a half, which doesn't work.
Yeah.
As a sort of multi-year Amazon thing, yes, that would work really well. And American Gods has that potential. They're about a quarter of the way through it with that first series.
Right, right. I was very sad when it ended. I thought, wait, there's a lot more.
There's so much more to come.
There's a lot more.
And actually, I was talking to someone the other day about how the way people watch things now, people binge watching 6, 7, 8, 9 episodes of a show.
Right.
That's way longer than a movie. And people are more than happy to sit down and watch 3-4 hours of TV if it's good enough.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. We watched 2 series of Stranger Things in a frighteningly short amount of time.
Yeah, me too.
Because it was this, you know, they had the space to do that well constructed thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, it was, yes, it was Spielberg movie nostalgia, but it was drawn out over the length where you could actually develop characters. And it was beautifully done.
I watched it on the way to Munich and back, the second season. Yeah.
Well, Good Omens is being done by BBC Studios in conjunction with Amazon. Doctor Who fans will be very pleased to know that David Tennant has been cast, along with Michael Sheen in the lead roles. So two very good actors.
Nice.
This should be a lot of fun.
They've got a great cast.
Yeah. It will be out next year. And by the way, Gaiman is scripted the show, which is good news.
Oh, he's show running. Yeah.
He's the showrunner. He was very involved in American Gods, too, I think.
Yeah.
No, this plays very well to him because he had the problem that his stuff was optioned by Hollywood. It'd be rewritten by somebody else. It would be made terrible. And this new, model of, okay, we'll give you 6 hours, what can you do with that, fits in much better. And I'm looking forward to seeing American Gods. It was supposed to be directed by Terry Gilliam about 10 years ago.
That would have been great.
Wow.
Which, but they couldn't quite get it complete, you know, funded and completed. But I think this movie better because that would have been cut down to 2 hours, and that story has enough in it that it can carry the miniseries space.
How many things has Terry Gilliam supposed to have directed? Yeah. Like, there's got to be dozens of projects that he was gonna do and never did.
There's some hitch in his giddy up. We don't know.
He's an unusual man.
Maybe that's it. Yeah.
They recently re-released Jabberwocky with a new clean print.
Oh, if you want to see some. That'd be a good Blu-ray.
Vintage weirdness.
Yeah.
Speaking of deals, did you see the Lord of the Rings, the Amazon deal for...
Amazon got very busy in the
$250 million.
And
that's just for the rights.
It's not even the story. It's the rights to...
Just the rights.
The world, because they're going to be prequels.
Right. So they don't even have anything in development. They haven't even started, like, even pre-production on anything, and they've already spent $250 million.
$250 million
That's mind-boggling.
The rights. Who gets all that money? J.R.R. Tolkien's great-great-grandson?
Yep.
Christopher Tolkien, yeah.
That's his son, right? Christopher.
Yeah.
Wow.
And his kids, presumably,
That's a mind-boggling amount of money.
Yeah. Well,
for rights.
Probably worth it. And it's less...
Oh, yeah.
It's more than... Let's put it this way. It's more than Jeff Bezos paid for the Washington Post.
But think about the number of people that could come up with that money. Think about nobody in Hollywood could come up with that kind of money.
When you're the richest man in the world, how are you going to compete with the richest man in the world?
Exactly.
I mean, I heard today that Netflix spends, $7-8 billion on programming. HBO spends about $2.5 billion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Apple thinks it's all in with $1 billion. And that just shows you that's not even table stakes.
Pocket change.
In this new world, this world of peak TV. Do you wish you were go back to reviewing TV, Jeff?
No.
It's the golden age. The platinum age.
It's funny. There was
Netflix said the year coming, they're going to spend $9 billion.
Amazing.
LinkedIn recommended a job to me the other day. Entertainment Weekly, a magazine I started, is hiring a TV critic. And I said on Twitter, should I apply?
That'd be fun.
Somebody says the first episode of the new Lord of the Rings series on Amazon is called Tom Bombadil Goes to Washington. So, good one, Zephyr. That's in the chat room.
Someone said that they had a treatment. It was Mordor he wrote.
Oh, let the puns begin. I love it. Google Home is now turned into an intercom. I don't know. I don't know anybody. I have echoes in every room, and I do use it as a room-to-room intercom. But now the Google Home has turned on this broadcast mode where you can say, tell everybody in the house, and like God mode.
Dinner is served.
In every room of the house.
I could use that.
Yes.
Yeah.
I could use
it. I don't know. I mean, for me, this is like peak Silicon Valley rich people problem thing. It's if you can afford a house in Silicon Valley where you need more than one Google thingy.
In every room you need it.
Yeah, you need a dozen at least.
I have not yet reached peak Google Home. I'm all in on the Echoes. I have them in every room, but I don't have Google Homes in every room. I dread the day that I have to have one of each in every room. That's what seems to be coming.
Well, the great thing now is that Black Friday, they're both going to compete for better prices.
Yeah, in fact, the kind
they're
of
talking to each other.
The sad little lonely Cortana device, the Invoke from Hardman Cardin, has been cut in half for Black Friday. It's $100, which it needs to be to compete, frankly. Here's Google's. Here's the image Google published of this new feature. It's time to leave for school, coming out of speakers in every room of the house.
Wow.
You're right. This is the ultimate first world. Not even first world. We need a new name for it. Silicon Valley problem.
The 1%. No, I mean, it's the same thing as like, well, we don't actually track how buses work because all our buses just go from our house to our workplace.
To the work.
Google Maps doesn't understand the idea of changing buses. Literally, if you're on a bus.
Doesn't that just take you to work? Don't you have Wi-Fi and leather seats? Yeah, come on.
It just takes you to
Isn't
work.
Isn't there a chef in the back making you some special treats?
Scrambled eggs in the morning?
But it's like you're on a bus. You're like, can I make my connection? It says, walk 200 yards back and get the bus behind you. It's like, oh, I'm on the bus. Can you not tell this? You know,
buses are complicated, Kevin.
They are. Subways That's are a lot easier than tracks.
Buses are easier than subways. Subways are actually not, you know, underground, out of Wi-Fi and cell phone range. Buses, there are four of us on there with our phones. You can tell we're all moving at the same speed at the same time. So, oh, right, That's you're fair. On that bus.
Actually, that's a good
So the Google Home Mini.
You can solve this.
Yeah. Is $19.
Whoa.
Google Black Friday. The 19. Echo Dot Black Friday is $29.99, down from $49.99.
Wow. So for $20, you could have it's a donut shaped.
You can do the
And
that is pretty cheap.
Tell me if it is it. I can't remember. Does it? I have one coming because all of us who bought Pixel 2 XLs have one coming. But does it have? A speaker built in, or do I have to pair it to a speaker for it to work?
No, it's speaker built in.
It does have a little, probably tinny.
What do you mean you have one coming? Do you get one with your Pixel?
Yeah.
Oh.
If you pre-order, I can't remember if it was a pre-order deal or whatever. This finally came because it's the panda color with a little orange button. That those are hard to get.
Oh, that's why it took so long. Yeah. Oh, did you get your Pixel Book?
I love my Pixel Book.
Do you?
Well, I'll tell you what's wrong with the Pixel Book. It's pretty good, besides the price, which is absurd.
Yeah,
$1,000 for a Chromebook. It's got everything's getting rid of bezels all of a sudden. It's got these massive bezels.
Because if it's a tablet, says the argument, you need something to hang on to.
Yeah, well,
yeah,
they don't have to for be dear that life. Big.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I know.
The other problem
that
is
that price.
So I was going to take this with me on this trip tonight, but trying to download shows onto it, so. Jeff's chronic complaint because I have the apps account or the G Suite.
Forget it.
So
long ago
when you couldn't do Google Play on G Suite, so I still have it on my other account. So I have to go to the other account to do Google Play. And then Netflix, I got to operate on the other account. That worked okay. But then I can't do Amazon Video because with Amazon Video, you got to rear load the Amazon app. And it won't let you do that on the Pixel Book unless you go into developer mode. So it's not a full tablet. It's a
That's
messy
frustrating.
Tablet.
That's frustrating. I'm sorry.
Used any apps, Leo?
I have in the past on other Chromebooks. You mean Android apps?
Yeah, because I thought the Pixel Book was better for that or that they'd gotten more integrated. Or
pretty much the same as others.
Yeah. It feels.
It's just Chrome OS.
Yeah. I think I use one or two apps that I use HipChat because that's an Android app. It's a little easier to use that on as an app.
I actually dislike going. So if New York Times, if the choice of going to the app or going to the web version, I far prefer the web version.
For one thing, all these apps launch in an Android-sized page.
Tiny window, yeah.
And then if you want to expand, it says, okay, but I'm going to have to restart if you want to go to full screen. Right. It's like, well, but I guess.
I thought maybe they'd fix that.
Well, I think from then on, right, it'll be full screen or I don't know. It's like, that's frustrating.
None of those happened with me, yeah, but it's...
That's frustrating. So you're saying it's Black... Because right now the Google Home Mini is $50, but at $20, and this is going to be on Black Friday?
Yeah, let me put the... it's a life hacker.
At $20...
That's cheap.
And you get a $35 Chromecast, that's a really interesting combination.
I just put the link up.
Because it talks to the Chromecast. You could say, hey, you know...
You get a Chromecast?
Yeah, if you don't already have one on every TV.
Sure,
yeah. Then you can
I need a new one. I gave one to my cousin. So
I know. I mean, I have them lying around. I bought so many.
Well, the life hacker.
You were buying for the Netflix deal, weren't you?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I got 18 years of Netflix coming to me free after buying all this. So $19, I think that's pretty interesting.
But you got a $10 in-store credit.
Oh. $19 plus a credit or... $29.
It's $19. Hold on. Google is flashing the price to $29 when you buy Google Store, Target, or Best Buy. Additionally, you get a $10 in-store credit.
Oh, so in effect is $19, but you're still paying.
It's in effect $19.
Okay.
Well, yeah.
No, I think that's interesting, and the idea is you can talk to your TV now with an addition of a couple of little devices.
Right.
That's pretty good.
Right. That is pretty cool.
Yeah. It's like...
How did you find the UK version of these offers? Because...
You don't get any of this stuff.
We're
going to give you crumpets
we're having Thanksgiving. Well, you know, we're having Thanksgiving because our boys can take that day off easily.
Nice.
But But Black Friday is becoming a thing here, which is really strange.
Really?
It is here, too. It is here, too, even though our Thanksgiving was weeks ago.
Well, it's nothing like Singles Day in China.
That's for sure.
Whoa! Did we talk about that last week? I think we did. Yeah.
No. 24 billion.
So that's their Black Friday in China. Yeah, one day sales at Alibaba. One day for one vendor, one retailer, $25 billion for one day. $8 billion in the first hour.
The holiday, though, like Singles Day, I just find that fascinating.
It's 11-11.
We have Valentine's Day. They have Singles Day. It's by far the biggest holiday.
It's Veterans Day. Okay, that's weird.
Yeah.
It's Armistice Day, and it's Singles Day because I guess it's 11-11 because it's single sticks, right?
Yeah.
11-11. Yeah. And it celebrates being single. I wonder if the Chinese government, when they were trying to control population, now you remember that for a while that you couldn't only have one child. I wonder if the Chinese government put this out as a way to kind of reduce population. Don't get married. Don't have kids. Just
wander
alone in the wilderness forever.
But it's orders of magnitude larger than Black Friday.
Black Friday in the U.S., $3 billion. Cyber Monday in the U.S., $3.4 billion. Okay. Singles Day in China, one retailer, $25 billion.
And it was $5 billion in like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because you don't really think of the Chinese as consumers, but there is such a growing middle class there. There is this massive consumer class there all of a sudden. Google Home Max, which is the big version of the Mini. This is the one I'm actually most interested in because it has a pretty good speaker on it. Is now getting FCC approval. It's going to launch along with Apple's HomePod next month. Now, this is interesting. It has MIMO Wi-Fi. So multiple input, multiple output, 2.4 and 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi bands. Maybe this is the speculation at 9 to 5 Google is so that when you pair units together, they talk to each other.
Yeah.
That's reasonable. $399.
Gotta be.
Chalk or color. So.
Is it a good speaker? I don't know.
Don't know. Haven't heard it yet. Everybody who heard.
Because I could see using that instead of a Sonos.
Well, exactly. Exactly. And the HomePods, everybody who heard the HomePods raved about them, said they were as good as, if not better than the Sonos. Both of these are Sonos priced, $299 for the Home Max and I think $399 for the HomePod. HomePod uses Siri, of course. Home Max uses Google's assistant, voice assistant. It's going to be a great Christmas.
We just got Amazon Echoes in Canada. Not that anybody cares other than Canadians, but.
Well, you should care. You should care.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I actually got one when I was at this conference in Munich, and once I figured out how to stop it from talking German and to start talking English.
What do you say? Do you use the same trigger words in German?
Is that Jeff's
one? I don't actually know what the trigger words were.
Adolf!
I went into the settings.
Achtung,
probably.
Achtung would be good.
Achtung but be I went perfect. Into the settings and changed it to English. And I've used it a bit. I don't know. I mean, it's handy. I don't see myself using it to the point where I need one in every room, but it's fun to.
Oh, we have one in every room. We have Sonos in every room. I have a Google Assistant in two out of the rooms. That's just ridiculous.
Well, how do you decide whether to use Amazon Echo or Google Home?
I mean, there are abilities that each, there is some non-overlap between the two,
Okay.
But truthfully, it's such a pain to think of different assistants that you just end up picking one and sticking with it. So, yeah. I think it should be called the Adolf, the Amazon Adolf.
Now Germans would be unhappy with that.
wouldn't like that. They don't want to be reminded of their glorious past.
It'd be Ludwig.
Ludwig. There you go.
There you go.
Amazon Ludwig. Well, I mean, is Alexa a reasonable thing in Germany? I don't know.
Yeah, good question.
Yeah.
You have to say Reinheitsgebot, or what's the word for Leistungsschutzrecht?
Leistungsschutzrecht.
That's it. That's the trigger word. Leistungsschutzrecht.
Amazon Leistungsschutzrecht. Ah!
Leistungsschutzrecht.
Well, the good news is it's very unlikely you'd say it by accident.
Oh.
And that's true.
You're never going to hear it on the TV.
No.
My favorite German word
is Fingerspitzengefühl.
Let's think what that could be.
Fingerspitzengefühl.
Gefühl.
I've got the beginning and the end, but I don't know what the middle is.
Finger spelling? I don't know. What
finger
is it?
Something, the feeling.
A spitz. The feeling at the tip of your finger.
Fingertip feeling.
Oh, okay.
Finger.
I have a certain feeling. Finger spitzing if you.
Interesting.
What, how do you say the tip of your tongue? Do they not do that?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You got me.
We're getting some German fans today, that's for sure.
Yes, sir. No, they laugh at us.
I've run into fans in Germany.
Yeah.
This is pretty much the Commonwealth broadcast. We've got Canada, the UK,
exactly,
and the US.
Well, I'm having this at the moment because I'm in Holland, and it's like I've just realized it's the first time for a long time I've been somewhere where I don't speak the language or read the language. And, you know, it's Holland, I can get away with it. Everyone speaks English. But
now you know how Donald Trump feels all the time.
Weird signage things going on and stuff.
Yeah, it's that's good. For sure. Leo, did I ever tell you about coming through the border, coming back from somewhere in Toronto?
No.
And the border guard, so I go up to him, even though he's Canadian, he's very frightening looking because he has lots of guns and
people think Mounties are cute.
Microphones. No, this guy.
Nothing cute about a Mountie.
Assault weapons and whatnot. Yeah. He's not dressed like a friendly Mountie.
No.
And he says, "Are you Matthew Ingram?" And I said, "Yes." And he said it in a way like,
uh-oh,
there was something wrong
you're
with being
trouble.
Matthew Ingram. And he said, "Are you on this show, This Week in Google?"
Oh, yes.
And I was like, "Yeah, I'm on there all the time." He says, "I love that show. I watch that show all the time."
That's fantastic. Well, I apologize for any besmirching of the fine Canadian Border Patrol.
He said, "I disagree with some of the things when you're talking about cybersecurity," said, "I love the show." So.
No, we don't expect that people will agree with everything we say. In fact, we expect them to get very angry and upset about. And
I should have told him he should write in with his views. Yeah.
We don't mind. Here's a new use for 280 characters on Twitter. Tetris.
Same chess?
Yeah.
Oh, Tetris.
Twitter Tetris.
Nice. I haven't seen that. That's excellent.
It's on GitHub.
That's some good work.
You can. It's not fast. You can do it. TWTPLAY Tetris. And so the way it works is you tweet to that account left, right, rotate, or drop.
Wow.
To vote for the next move. The votes are tallied every 3 minutes.
What? So this is crowdsourced Tetris.
It's the world's slowest game of Tetris. Well, let's put it this way. Like, 19 like hours to clear one line.
I think we have enough programmers now. We don't need any more.
That's the conclusion that you reach.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was it Twitch Plays? Twitch Plays.
Oh, remember
something.
That? Pokemon? Yeah.
Yeah, that Pokemon. Was cool.
That was wild.
Fascinating.
But I think, I updated Note Alive to do 280 character Twitter, and it's messing with my flow. It's really weird. So Note Alive is the tool I use to do my live conference tweeting.
I don't like it.
And, you know, part of the challenge of that was listening to somebody and getting down 140 characters. And 280, I can get, like, they're rambling in, and it's not as good.
What's the app you use?
Notalive.com.
Oh, Notalive. Okay.
NotaLive.com. Yeah. And
I like the brevity. I like the requirement to trim your thoughts down to a specific length. I mean, it imposes a certain discipline. You know, if sonnet could just be a thousand lines long, then they wouldn't be as good. Not that my tweets are sonnets.
But this was the point. This was the point of me doing this at conferences was it made me listen really closely because I had to make them fit in the space. So I was taking notes, but I was also summarizing at the same time, which meant I was really engaged with the speakers. And this is my way of sort of psyching myself into not getting distracted by the internet while I'm listening.
And now conference. You can just ramble on and on.
And now I can just like write down whatever they're going. It's like, it's not as good. I don't have to edit as much. So I may turn it back again.
Can you turn off 280 characters?
There's a Chrome extension that will reduce it.
That's so funny. That's so funny.
Well, no, but this is my code. So I changed 140 to 280 in the code.
I see.
This morning because I was doing a conference. I was like, okay, let's see how this feels. And it didn't feel as. I felt like I missed the constraint. It was weird.
Yeah.
It's interesting how fast, though, all the clients seem to have updated to accommodate 280 characters. I use Dave Weiner's radio3.io to
Wow, good for you.
Do you know about it?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm a big fan of Dave's.
I love it.
Dave comes up with them.
It's kind of old school. It lets you, so basically, that I use this now to tweet the links that we're going to cover on various shows. And so it tweets it. It also, but so he updated to 280 characters like within a day. So that's nice. A lot of the clients have already, I noticed.
I can't stand the icon for how full you are.
The circle thing. I hate that.
Thought for the first days, I thought it was
an actual number that goes down with.
I thought it was a ticking clock, and the Twitter was slow.
It's just stupid. Over design.
Speaking of Twitter, I think this is brand new. Twitter now says that it will pull verification for miscreant users.
Oh, so they've decided now it's not verification; it's a reward.
That's what
that
looks
drives
like.
Me nuts.
This whole thing is a train wreck. It's a train wreck. Let's face it. Verification from the beginning was a train wreck.
It shouldn't be a reward. It should be a way of saying, if they do it right, the blue check doesn't mean approval, endorsement. It merely means this person is who he says or she says they are.
But and from the beginning, they handed it out to some people and not to other people.
It was a reward, and now they're now confirmed that it's a reward by saying, well, you know, you're not going to get to keep it if we don't like you.
But, I mean, unfortunately, also, they're lying in the bed they made. Like that, somebody made the decision in the beginning that it was going to be totally opaque, and some people were going to get it, and other people weren't.
Because they were inefficient. You're right. Yeah,
right.
But also, they added features. They basically had a bad model of how their system worked, which was there were important people and there were plebs, and the important people get to be verified, and they get the tools, and the plebs don't. And what actually happens on Twitter is that if you say something interesting, it takes off, and suddenly you're in hell because everything is replying to you, your system's falling apart, and you don't have the tools they built for people who have that problem because you're not verified. So, you know, if you have a tweet that gets retweeted 1,000 times and that auto-verifies you, that would be a good thing. Or, you know, well, they should separate the two things. One is like, is this the person?
Well, they should give you the tools. Forget about the verification.
Or is this the parody? Or should they? Or is, you know? Or can we have tools that restrict my replies in useful ways? And you know, they basically failed at that for so many years. It's not funny anymore.
Do they still have the tools where I only hear tweets from verified users?
Yes.
See, if that meant you're only going to hear tweets from people who have taken the time to verify that they're real, I would do it. But if it's basically saying only people we've decided to reward,
we've decided
for whatever unknown reason.
So
you know, to be
Nazis
fair, Facebook did the same thing.
Did they?
Yeah. So Facebook reached out to me, years ago, and said, "Would you like to be verified?" I didn't even know they had verification.
Can't you make a good case that if a guy's a Nazi and tweeting from his account, that a verification is useful because you know that this is not a spoofed account?
Well, that was Twitter's argument when they verified whoever it was that people got upset about, was they were verifying that it was him, the real Nazi,
it's
who runs the real Nazi organization.
It's not a especially now, of all times, when they have all these spoof accounts from that we don't know who's real and who's not.
The problem is they've been trying to do two things. They've been one has been you're actually who you say you are, and the other is we choose who gets the blue check, and you don't know why. And you can't have both those two things don't work together. So they've been kind of sucking, and now they're trying to blow. You can't do both of them at the same time.
Well, I've just learned something here today. You can't suck and blow at the same time.
That's a Shakespearean expression, by the way.
Wind doth suck, no wind doth blow, not both. Let's take a break. Let's take a break. Let's take a break. Hold on, Kevin.
On that note.
Well, hold on.
Speaking of winds that...
Speaking of blowhards and winds that carry me aloft, I think I shall depart now.
Is it time for you to depart? Thank you, Jeff.
It is time for me to depart.
I'm sorry.
Great to be here.
I was hoping to have this show over before you had to leave, but...
Well, Ariana Huffington would say you need your sleep.
'Twas not. I wasn't that late. Now come on. 'Twas not.
Come on, for dozing off just before the show.
Yes. Thank you, Jeff Jarvis.
Thank you. Yeah. See you next week.
CUNY, City University of New York, BuzzMachine.com. What would Google do? Public parts. Have a great. Where are you going?
Buenos Aires.
Buenos Aires.
Oh, nice. Have a great time in Buenos Aires.
Will do for 2 days.
Eat some meat for me. Actually, Provoleta is my favorite.
Restaurant or food?
Food. It's a provolone cheese grilled in a skillet. Oh, Provoleta.
Ooh, thank you. Oh, it's the queso of Argentina, in other words.
It is the, yes.
the queso fundido.
You have to read Mache's Argentina on two steaks a day article, though.
The beef is very good.
I like it already.
Actually, the Italian food's excellent as well.
Yeah.
Have a great time.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. Bye. See you later. Our show today brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. If you listen to our shows, you probably know the sound that Ring makes because we all have Ring doorbells. And sometimes we forget to mute our phones and you hear, ding, you hear the Ring doorbell going off. And it's funny, too, because then everybody in the studio will go, is that mine? Is that mine? Ring is awesome. It's a doorbell that replaces your existing wired or unwired doorbell, because they have the One Ring model has a big battery in it, the year-long battery that you could put anywhere, even your bedroom door if you wanted a doorbell on your bedroom door. But it's not just a doorbell. On the Ring video doorbell is also a high-def camera, speaker, microphone, and motion sensing. So it does everything you want. It's like kind of a guardian at the gates, watching your door, watching your footpath up to your door, your front yard, keeping an eye on motion out there. If somebody comes to the door or even comes up the steps, you could say, hey, you could talk to them. You'll get a notification on your phone no matter where you are. You don't even have to be at home. You could be at work. You could be, having Provoleta in Buenos Aires. You could be doing anything. And that's a really nice feeling of security. Never miss a package. When the delivery service comes to the door, you say, hey, leave it there. I'll keep an eye on it. Thanks. I'm in the bathtub. I'll sign it tomorrow, whatever. You can keep an eye on your packages, too, which I really like. Ring's expanded the line, of course. Now they've got the Ring Floodlight Cam. You've seen these, the action, the floodlights that, turn on the back of your house when somebody walks out. Those are a convenience. But these are them on steroids. So, first of all, they're LED lights, so they don't burn out. They're bright. They're consistent light. They come on quick. You also have the camera, the motion sensor, the speaker, and the microphone on it, and an alarm. So now when somebody is in your backyard, you'll get a notification. The lights will come on. You can see who it is. You can talk to them. You can chase them off. Hey, raccoons, get out of there. And if they don't move, you can fire off a 110 decibel alarm. It's the ultimate in home security. High visibility floodlights, a powerful HD camera. No wonder Wall Street Journal called it the best of CES this year. I tell you what, Ring is just doing great things. All sorts of new things coming from Ring. But check out the Ring of Security kits we've put together and save up to $150. Go to ring.com/twig. Choose your Ring doorbell and up to 1, 2, or 3 Ring floodlight cams. Save up to $150. Ring.com/twig. Be a great holiday gift for family and friends who want security too. I'm going to set my mom up. Ring.com/twig. We thank them so much for their support of this week in Google. We continue on with Matthew Ingram from the Columbia Journalism Review, CJR. It's his new job. First met him, of course, at GigaOM, then at Fortune, now at CJR. It's great to have you back, Matthew. And from the Netherlands, it's Mr. Kevin Marks, the king of the indie web, indieweb.org. He's worked everywhere, including Apple, Google, and BT. And he's now just promoting the independent web and enjoying pub food in Amsterdam. Actually, the coffee in Amsterdam is superb. I'm a big Amsterdam coffee fan.
Oh, the seafood is also very good.
Really? I didn't have any seafood. I should.
Okay, I have a restaurant for you.
Good. Good. Bloomberg is launching, speaking of Twitter, a Twitter-based news network in December. What? what? So I guess...
Okay.
The project was announced in May. Goldman Sachs, Infinity, TD. Oh, it's got advertisers. TD Ameritrade, CA Technologies, AT&T, and CME Group, each contributing up to $3 million to the partnership. 50 reporters will be dedicated to the site. It's a Twitter feed? That's bizarre.
It fits Bloomberg. Bloomberg has been, you know, a ticker tape supplier for ages, so feeding out Twitter maps to their core competency. You know. The question is, are you going to trade on it?
Oh, you think it'll be more finance-focused. That makes sense. Of course, yeah.
They're the news ticker. And the news ticker with backup links and analysis.
But to be really useful, you would have to have a Twitter account where you only followed it. Because otherwise you're going to have people's sandwiches and stuff mixed in with your stuff.
Boot notifications in, yeah. I'm sure you made this work.
Oh, yeah, notifications. Can you do granular notifications to say, just notify me when Bloomberg tweets?
I don't think so.
Yes, you can.
Can you?
Any specific account?
That's like the old track feature, which...
It's still there. No, it's still there. You have to dig for it, but you can make it notify you when certain people tweet.
Ah, all right.
I have a tool for this as well, which you can run on Android, but there, it's actually in the Twitter app, but really buried now.
I think Bloomberg's hoping that you'll leave the player kind of on in your Twitter or your stream. Yep. And so you'll be reading tweets and it'll be in the background, kind of like people keep, you know, CNN on in the background. Or
it's kind of amazing how Twitter, people are trying to bend Twitter to all sorts of different things. And yet it seems to bend it's quite malleable.
Well, and Twitter's trying to be bent, right? They're trying to bend as well.
They want to
be
they've bent.
Been, right. So that's why they've been approaching live video companies to do that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Trying to keep people on the platform longer.
Let's see. Android distribution numbers for November, almost zero change to Oreo. Doesn't seem to be, it's a tiny sliver. It's been out for 3 months, Android 8.1. And the growth in November, 0.3%. It was 0.2% in October. So, hey, that's a big jump. but as you can see from this tiny bar chart, Oreo still represents a fraction of the overall use of Android. What's the biggest slice? Marshmallow, then lollipop, then nougat, then Kit Kat. But there's still a significant number of gingerbread ice cream sandwich users. They're still out there. God. They're a slice as big as Oreo, actually. Oreo, in fact, they're bigger. More people are that's the headline. More people are using gingerbread, Android 2.3, than the latest version, Oreo, Android 8.0. That's depressing.
But they mitigated that to some extent because there's the compatibility library. But it's still depressing.
Well, it underscores my inclination to say if you're going to get an Android phone, get a Pixel phone. Because you're always going to be up to date and you will get updated automatically.
That's what I like the best about having an Nexus.
If you have the budget,
If you have the budget. Is there a good, inexpensive phone that updates regularly? I guess I'll have to watch all about Android, ask them. But
OnePlus was pretty good, but there's some scary breach this week.
Let's talk about that. So OnePlus previously was attacked because they had a daemon on there that would launch that would automatically phone home with information about you. And they didn't give a way to get rid of it. Now, it looks like they left a back door on their phones. Engineer mode. It's a Qualcomm testing app.
Nice.
That lets you, get root level access to the phone without unlocking the bootloader. Now, of course, the bad guy would probably have to have physical access to your phone. But having done so, they could completely own it without you knowing. OnePlus says they're looking into it. And they'll probably, I imagine, push a software update that can turn off engineer mode. Let's see. Here's the update from Engadget. OnePlus has issued a statement that recaps the nature of engineer mode, its threat. Yes, you do need physical access. It's promising to remove it through a future over-the-air update. Qualcomm has looked into engineer mode and says, hey, that's not us. There's some Qualcomm code in there, but somebody else wrote it, which kind of makes me think OnePlus took the engineer mode app and or the source code and modified it. After in-depth investigation, says Qualcomm, we've determined the engineer mode app in question was not authored by Qualcomm. It no longer resembles the original code we provided. It was based upon a similarly named testing app that was limited to displaying device information. So, now remember, OnePlus is a Chinese company. I mean, I think these are the kinds of revelations that are damaging to it.
Well, we know that Chinese companies routinely install stuff like that.
Right.
I mean, that's a known fact.
But it's the classic God mode problem, isn't it? It's the, I will build a thing that lets me have complete access to everything.
Right.
And then you secure it badly. And this is what, you know.
Or forget to take it off.
Gung-ho startups do. And a big chunk of China is built on layers of gung-ho startups who will do that kind of thing at that level. It's like three levels down from the Uber God mode. But
you do need physical access. I mean, if you have physical access to someone's phone, you can do almost anything.
Right.
It's not just
that's a good
one
point. That's a very good point. There's nothing to panic about anyway. The new OnePlus does come out in 16 hours tomorrow, 11 a.m. in Brooklyn, 11 a.m. Eastern, the OnePlus 5T. And we're hoping to get a review unit and look at it. We might be able to see it as soon as Saturday on the new screensavers.
They're nice phones.
Yeah, I really liked. I had the first OnePlus, I think the second OnePlus 2. I've had a number of them, and I loved them. The original OnePlus had amazing battery life. It was a very good phone for its time. Cameras were not ever as good as the top-of-the-line Samsungs.
No, that's true.
And I don't know. It depends on how you use the phone. I pay a lot of attention to the camera, but I notice I don't really use the camera that often. But when you do, it's really nice to have a decent camera in your pocket. new app called Lies by Michael Saman. He was 17 years old when he went to work for Facebook. He'd already launched five apps at the age of 17. He got a full-time engineering gig as the social network's go-to teen over the past 3 years. He helped Facebook try to crack the middle school market with apps like the now-defunct Life Stage. This is Josh Constein writing in TechCrunch. In August, he switched sides. He went to work for Google. Michael Saman's latest, now he's 21, is a trivia game called Lies, where you try to guess the one true fact about a friend among an array of fibs. So we've seen these games before where you have, you know, two lies and a truth, and you have to figure out which one it is. The slice that's different that makes it interesting is it's about your friends. I like that. And apparently you need to supply the lies. In Lies, you upload your contacts. Then you take a Tinder-style profile quiz where you swipe yes or no about questions about yourself. Then you're given four choice questions about friends with the goal of correctly guessing which one is true. I think this is going to do well. 21 years old. Wow.
Yeah, he's old now.
Yeah, he's an old hat. He's slowing down. He said it took a whole two weekends to build the app.
I was at this media conference in Munich, and there was a kid involved in the panel that I was on. He was 14, from Ireland.
Wow.
And he's taught himself to code and has developed five or six apps already. The one he was talking about was, I'm trying to remember the name of it, but it was like a Tinder for media, for news. So you swipe left on stories that you aren't interested in, and it gradually learns what you're interested in. Interesting kid.
Well, you know, this is where we're headed. We had one of America's top young scientists on the new screensavers on Saturday, Gitanjali Rao. She's 11 years old.
Wow.
She won the Discovery Education 3M Young Scientist Challenge. She invented a Arduino-based device to test water quality for the residents of Flint, Michigan.
Wow. Fascinating.
11. And by the way, watch the interview if you get a chance. So well-spoken, so smart. Wow. I was stunned. I was stunned. Nitanjali Rao.
I was reading comic books, I think.
Yeah, comic books. I couldn't read. I was banging rocks together.
Yo-yos, I think that was a big deal.
Yo-yos. Yeah, yo-yos are really big. Remember that? Yeah.
Figured that out.
You'd have, because you know why? Because it was good marketing on the part of who made those yo-yos? Say again?
Duncan.
The Duncan yo-yo guy would come to your elementary school. Remember that?
Yeah, and do all the tricks. Yeah.
Walk the dog. Sleeping. Walk the dog. Yeah. I want to do that. Well, here we go. Have some Duncan yo-yos. Brilliant. So we learned
lots of skills when we were that age. They just weren't very useful.
That's true.
I could solve a Rubik's Cube when I was 11. Yeah,
really?
That was my skill.
That's actually impressive.
That's the right timing. Yeah.
That's really impressive. Of course, now kids do it. They're like seeing how fast they are.
And look at you now.
Yeah, right. Look what happened to you. Yeah. You're in a bar in the Netherlands.
I'll be told you to pan the camera so you can see the...
Yeah, everybody wants you. The chat room saying, please show us the rest of the... Rest of the bar.
Leo, did you see...
Here we go. We're going to see the beautiful...
Are there any actual Dutch people in there?
Not that leaving us. They still need to do this, yeah.
Oh, it's...
They're ignoring you.
It's like the hotel. It's really not even a bar. It's just like a...
Oh, okay. It's quite large.
It's a hotel, yeah. Okay. It's a conference hotel. It's like Dutch design hotel. But, yeah.
So it's very clean, in other words.
Yes.
Let's see what else here. Volvo's parent company. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry, Matthew.
I just wondered if you saw. I didn't see this in the lineup. Did you see that Amazon did a test of its cashierless store? I think Bloomberg wrote about it. They were testing the facial recognition. So obviously, the store recognizes you when you buy things or when you take things off the shelf, and then it bills your account automatically. So obviously it has to recognize who you are. So a bunch of employees dressed up as Pikachu. So they bright yellow Pikachu costumes.
And you know what?
To see whether they...
They got caught.
And it had no problem.
No, the Pikachu didn't fool it. That sounds a little bit like maybe a little bit of a staged publicity stunt. These are called the Amazon Go stores, and they had one in Seattle. Have anybody ever been to one?
No.
So you walk in, it knows who you are, you pick up what you want, and you leave. That's it. I don't know if you have to check in with a mobile app or something.
Now, I think you have to be logged in somehow.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm always logged in on my Amazon app, aren't I? I mean,
yeah,
and it's probably beaconing all the time as I wander around. Well, God only knows what it's sending back to the home office.
Jeff knows where you are at all times.
Yeah, of course he does. Bezos, not Jarvis. So I thought it was just a test. So it sounds like they're actually planning to.
Yeah, they're close to rolling out. They're starting to hire like actual retail employees, not just engineers.
So if you work at Whole Foods right now, you got to be terrified.
Well, we talked about this before. There's a whole generation of, you know, sort of early entry jobs, like cashier type jobs. They're just going to go away eventually.
Yeah. This Bloomberg story does point out that a Whole Foods store, which is like 1,800 square feet with a lot more items, would be a little bit harder.
Yeah.
To make work.
Right now.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Actually, Whole Foods are bigger. The Go store is 1,800 square feet. But the Whole Foods
is huge.
Yeah, yeah. Much bigger than that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're like...
Well, it depends on Whole Foods, but most of them are very, very big.
An 1,800 square foot Whole Foods would be tiny. Okay. Let me correct myself on that. You ready for self-driving trucks? Because everybody's doing them. Elon Musk, I think, is it today or tomorrow, is going to show off theirs. Yep. The Tesla. Yep. And apparently, there are already robo-trucks delivering refrigerators. We got to move these microwave ovens. Nice, you know, money for nothing and my truck for free. The startup Embark has been hauling Frigidaires up the I-10 from El Paso to Palm Springs. There is a human rider in the cab to monitor, but the ultimate goal is to get rid of the human. So this has been going on all this time. Nobody even knew.
I just want to grab a clip of you saying the ultimate goal is to get rid of the human.
The ultimate goal is to get rid of the human. Well, actually, it would probably say it exactly as I did, right? In a natural sounding, yeah, almost,
pretty good at that part now.
Almost human voice. That part's easy.
Humans are inefficient, Leo.
Our goal is to get rid of the human. Well, we'll look forward to finding new work. Volvo is just their parent company, just bought a flying car startup. Now, if you have flying...
Yeah, Tesla's working on one, too.
Yeah, but these have to be autonomous. There's no way I'm going to trust a human to pilot a flying car.
Jesus, no.
No lines in the road or anything. And they have to have inter-vehicle communication, and they have to, you know, I mean...
Tesla's talking about a sort of vertical takeoff and landing kind of vehicle.
Yeah.
That would sort of pick you up and deposit you on rooftops and whatnot.
Yeah. This is Terra Fugia's TFX. It actually looks really cool. So it looks like...
I think Boeing was working on one too, weren't they? Boeing or one of the plane companies.
So this is a VTOL or a vertical takeoff and landing vehicle. It looks just like a car, but it's got helicopter, dual helicopter rotors on it, which I think they would tilt, right? So...
Yeah.
Wow. Electric powered, and I pray autonomous, because otherwise it's just not gonna work.
But I'm sure, like, just as with trucks, I'm sure there's gonna be a human being in there for at least a few years just to sit there, to make people feel comfortable.
Yeah. Encryption's in the news again, of course, after, you know, I think it's now weekly we're going to have mass shootings in the United States. Do people in Canada and the UK just shake their head? Are they baffled? Are they?
What? Yes. Yes.
Of course, this is what's interesting. We had one yesterday in Northern California that barely made the news because he only killed 5 people. It barely made the news.
Only because of lockdown.
Yeah, protocol. And he was trying to get into a school, and thank God the administrators heard gunshots, ran to the doors and locked him, and he didn't get in because it could have been worse than anything.
Yeah.
An elementary school. But what's interesting is it's so commonplace now in the U.S., it wasn't even that big a story.
Well, and there's been half a dozen since Las Vegas, which wasn't that long ago. It just when you think, well, this is... the worst, you know, it just keeps coming. They just keep happening.
Oh, it's so sad. And of course, in every case, the shooter will have a smartphone. And in every case, the Department of Justice will want to get in. And in most cases, it will be encrypted and locked. So it's ancient history now, but the Texas shooting of a couple of weeks ago, there is an iPhone. And, you know, Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein said, when you shoot dozens of innocent American citizens, we want law enforcement to investigate your communications and stored data. There are things you need to know. He said, as a matter of fact, you might want to argue with, no reasonable person questions our right to access the phone. But the company that built it, and I think we know now it's Apple, claims that it purposely designed the operating system so the company cannot open the phone even with the order from a federal judge. In addition to costing a great deal of time and money, this is surely going to cost lives. I mean, of course, in a vacuum, you would say, well, yeah, law enforcement should be able to get into that phone. In a vacuum, the problem is now, this is an interesting thing that Steve Gibson said yesterday on Security Now that might change the conversation. What we've always said is, well, if there's a backdoor, if there's a key to get into it, then what's to stop China or Russia or any other country from saying to Apple, okay, well, we want to get in these phones too. And So that's problem number one. It's not just the Department of Justice in the United States that would then have access. There's also the larger issue of if you do have a backdoor, how, you know, we've seen the NSA, the CIA, and the FBI all be hacked and exploits escape. How long can you keep that a secret? But Steve Gibson said an interesting thing. He said he believes, and I don't know if anybody else has said this or if it's confirmed, that it is possible for Apple to unlock just one phone without providing the means to unlock any other phone. That every phone has a dedicated encryption key that could be exfiltrated by the company. That would be interesting if that's the case.
Really? Because I thought the argument was that you couldn't do that. And so that by providing it for one phone, they would effectively just give everybody a key.
It doesn't obviate the first argument, which is, well, if you let it be known that you can do that, here comes China. But it does kind of soften the second argument. It doesn't, in fact, make all of our phones more at risk. So I've never heard anybody else say this, and I don't know if this is the case, but Steve says it's his understanding and belief that it is possible to unlock any individual iPhone. Apple could.
I mean, Steve has forgotten more about this than I will ever know. So I would certainly take his word for it.
Yeah, I mean, they don't have the means today,
right?
But they could. They could have the means, and they could actually say, I think this is what he's implying, they could push out an update to any phone that would make that possible and then exfiltrate it.
And it's possible that Apple doesn't want to admit that they can do that because they would much rather not.
Right.
So if you say we can't do it without providing it for every phone, then you...
So you could do a selective operating system update, in effect, that is dedicated just to that phone. I'm sure Apple wouldn't want to push a system-wide operating system update that would make that possible because they don't want to get subpoenas from other places.
That's the thing. Once you make it obvious that you can, then everyone is going to start asking you to do it.
Right. So that I would understand. But one of the arguments we always give is, well, that's going to make all of our phones more vulnerable to bad guys. And I don't know if that's the case. So, I need to get have a fuller conversation with Steve about that. And maybe he can give me some links, something to be aware of anyway. Of course, and we talked about this a little bit yesterday too. Your antivirus could be the biggest hole in your computer system. Yes. There's a new flaw called AV Gator. Gator not as an alligator, but Gator as an opening a gate. That takes advantage of your antivirus, and many are susceptible to this, to get root access to the operating system. Oh, boy.
And actually, antivirus, like hackers have talked for a long time about how antivirus is one of the best roots because it gets root access to your system. Right. That's how it protects you from viruses.
Exactly.
So it's the best possible introduction, medium for a virus.
And speaking of hacking, this one really scared me. The Department of Homeland Security was able to hack the new Boeing 757 within 48 hours with a remote, non-cooperative penetration.
Nice.
Yeah. Hey. I'll avoid the Harvey Weinstein
joke. That's some good work. Yes, thank you for not doing
yes,
that.
Yes, thank you. You didn't have to have anybody touch the airplane.
Wow.
You did it through RF.
Really?
Actually, this is not a new... RF. I'm sorry. This is not a new plane. This is a older Boeing 757 commercial plane purchased by the DHS for this testing. And the response from experts was, oh, we've known about that for years.
That's reassuring.
But... In March of this year, at a technical exchange meeting, the DHS told seven airline pilot captains from America and Delta about it. The quote is, all seven of them broke their jaw hitting the table when they said, you guys have known about this for years and haven't bothered to let us know because we depend on this stuff to be absolutely the Bible. Wow.
Seems like the kind of thing you might want to mention.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So let's see. This is Robert Hickey, aviation program manager within the cybersecurity division of the Department of Homeland Security Science and Technology Directorate. I'm glad we have a Science and Technology Directorate. Sounds a little Kafka-esque, but I'm glad we have it. he says, I didn't have anybody touching the airplane. I didn't have an insider threat. I stood off using the typical stuff that could get through security. We were able to establish a presence on the systems of that aircraft using RF. And I guess they were able to modify the avionics. They were, I don't know what exactly they did. They don't say. Maybe they don't want to say what they could do.
They probably shouldn't go into too much detail.
Yeah. The airlines say it's too expensive to fix. The cost of
even more reassuring.
Yeah, the cost of changing one line of code on a piece of avionics equipment is $1 million and takes a year to implement. Wow. Guess you got to do it right the first time.
Wow.
Okay, just, you know, now you know. So now you know the rest of the story. Senators are now pushing for, I'm curious what you guys think of this, dumping Social Security numbers for identification ever since the Equifax hack. The Senate Commerce Committee had testimony from Marissa Meyer, Verizon's privacy officer Karen Zakaria, both the current and former CEOs of Equifax. I think Bruce Schneier, this is the one Bruce Schneier testified at as well. They brought up the Brazilian system, which is a system of citizen IDs through public key crypto, digital certificates. The certificate lasts no more than 3 years at most. It can be used to issue a digital signature, much like a written signature. And very importantly, unlike social security numbers or fingerprints, it can be the identity accounts can be revoked and reissued as easily through a national established protocol. I should ask Jeff to check this out when he was on his way to Buenos Aires. The problem is that as soon as you do that in the United States, and I don't know if this is an issue in other countries, people scream in horror, national identity card, and the conversation immediately ends. It is a hot topic, a hot button in the U.S. Congress. You can't have a national ID card. Nothing to say. Okay.
You know, it's like, but we have them. They're made of paper, and they have a seven-digit number on.
Right. Right.
And my first U.S. bank account, that was required to be my login.
Isn't that terrible? They use your social for a login?
The social was your login, and the password had to be a 4 to 6 digit.
Oh!
And wow. They stored it in phone typing numbers. So they'd actually reduce the actual variation down to 10 digits. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Now, I guess Google doesn't own Boston Dynamics anymore.
They sold them, yeah.
Thank God. Boston Dynamics has made, they say, a new robot dog that's kid-friendly. Well, at least the color is a kid-friendly yellow, but I'm going to show you the video of Spot Mini, and you tell me, is this kid-friendly? Here comes Spot Mini. I should turn on the sound for this. Ah! Ah!
It's a demo dog.
It's terrifying! Here, let's do it again one more time, just in case you weren't getting nightmares. Here comes the dog. It looks at you with its weird eyes and then trots off. Yeah, that's kid-friendly. Sure, what kid wouldn't want one of those?
Yeah. If your kid is Arnold Schwarzenegger. Right on that one.
Practically Ibo.
They're bringing back Ibo.
They are? Sony is?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. They are bringing it back, yeah.
Why?
Because sad people want to spend $2,500 on a fake dog. They're kind of cute.
Sony says it will form an emotional bond with members of the household, providing them with love, affection, and the joy of nurturing and raising a companion. It uses, yeah. Oh, Jesus Christ, it's got a rubber tail. That's,
yeah.
That is nice. That is also, I'm sorry, I know it's small, but. Oh. Just get a real dog.
Dude, doesn't that make you want one?
Just get a real freaking dog.
I have four real dogs. I don't really.
Oh, you could do a high five with it? Its body can move along 22 axes. Its eyes use two OLED panels to show a range of expressions. Battery life, 2 hours. So you can play with it, but it's going to be sleeping pretty quick. 3 hour recharge time. Wow. How much do you think? 2,000? That's what the old one was.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
I think it should be like the Tamagotchis. Do you remember those where if you didn't take care of them, they would die?
Those. Yeah.
That would be a useful lesson.
You also have to have a subscription, $26 a month for 3 years.
Nice.
And just as if that weren't enough, you can also get an accessory called the iBone. The iBone. It will go on sale January 11th. I don't know why they missed the holidays. Only in Japan. It costs 198,000 yen. That's about $1,700 plus $26 subscription.
Sorry, the iBone is just a terrible name. I mean, does anyone do any market research?
They're not selling outside of Japan.
iBone.
That's the bone.
Jesus.
It's the bone that the iBone bites is the iBone.
Okay.
40th birthday of the computer that started the graphic user interface revolution, the Xerox Alto. Computer, November 10th was the 40th anniversary, unveiled by Xerox executives in 1977. The Computer History Museum in Mountain View brought some of the park researchers who worked on the Alto together. John Schock, Dan Ingalls, Doug Bratz, Bob Sproul, Tom Malloy, Charles Simonyi, and David C. Brock. The Alto had a mouse, it had windows, it had menus, had a word processor. It looked a lot like a Mac, but it cost a lot more.
Was that the one that Doug Engelbart did the mouse demonstration?
No, that was way before
the spreadsheet demonstration.
Yeah, that was a lot earlier. But it was this. This was Xerox's commercialized kind of version of the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was for office workers was the idea. Big old CRT, though. And look at the curvature of the screen. And, you know, I mean, just the world wasn't ready for that 40 years ago. All right, we're going to wrap it up because I think we're losing Kevin. What time is it? What time is it, Kevin? It's like the middle
of the
night.
It's like 1 in the morning or something.
Jesus.
It's 20 to 1, yes.
I'm sorry. We'll wrap this up. You can go back to bed. Thank you for getting up and staying with us. I appreciate it. I want to talk about our sponsor, 23andMe, and then we'll get our picks of the week out of the way. 23andMe is a fabulous personal genetic service that helps you understand what your 23 pairs of chromosomes tell you, your DNA tells you about yourself, about your family. It is, if nothing else, it's fun. I'm going to log into my 23andMe account because I want to show you all the things I know about myself. I did it a long time ago. I like it because it was easy. There, you don't have to go to a clinic to get blood draw. You just spit into a little vial. They send you in a kit. You mail it back. Within 6 to 8 weeks, you're going to get your report. And the nice thing, the report is constantly being updated. So there's always new information. Since, for instance, you know, I'm getting messages from people who think they're related to me. That's the DNA relatives thing. And it's kind of cool. You have to give permission, obviously, and so do they. It's not like... But it will help you. It's a relative finder. It will help you find relatives. And in fact, the relative finder found for me somebody who's definitely a cousin because his last name is the same as my grandma's maiden name. So that's cool. Anthony Jacoby. He and I share 3.44% of our DNA. So I could connect with him if I wanted to. That's kind of fun. Be careful, though. This can also reveal information that maybe you don't want revealed. Who was it sent me a note saying, yeah, I found out that my sister wasn't really my sister. Okay, you know, that's not a negative. I think it's kind of interesting to learn this stuff. You could find out also in the reports things like where your family comes from, 10,000 years, 100,000 years. This is cool. This is, for instance, here's the maternal haplogroup, and it shows the migration of my mother's DNA line starting 180,000 years ago in Africa. moving north into the Middle East 59,000 years ago, up north from there, and then finally into Europe 47,000 years ago. That is so cool. You could find out how much Neanderthal. This is an example of something that's new. Only recently have they realized that Homo sapiens has Neanderthal ancestry. They didn't for a long time. They didn't think that there was any interbreeding. But after they did the Neanderthal genome a few years ago, they were able to show that it's true. In fact, I have 265 Neanderthal variants on my DNA, which puts me in seventh place of my family and friends. You get all the scientific details, too. So this is a great gift for somebody interested in genetics. You can, they have lots of information about this. And since genetics is the next big frontier, I think it's a great thing for young people to learn about. I think this would be a fun thing to do for the family. And right now, they have a special Thanksgiving deal, which is fantastic. $49 per kit when you buy two or more. So get the whole family involved in 23andMe. 23andMe.com/twit. That's the number 23andMe.com/twit. And then when your family gets together, you know, give it to them on Thanksgiving. And when they get back together for the Christmas holiday break, you can all talk about your DNA. It's really fun. You can also find out a lot more, including traits. Things like, you know, hairy backs and waxy ears and things like that. It's chin clefts. My height may be influenced by a Neanderthal variant in the LPP gene. Did you? I didn't know that. Really? 23andMe.com/twit. Fascinating. A lot of fun. And a great way to learn about genetics for the whole family. 23andMe.com/twit. We can wrap things up. Matthew Ingram, great to have you from your new job, the Columbia Journalism Report, CJR. Is that? Can I read that online? Do I have to subscribe to that? What is the deal with that?
Yeah. No, you can read it online. Certain things that were that are in the magazine don't show up until after.
It's CJR.org.
Yeah.
And I actually love it because I'm reading stuff all the time in it because it's really about our trade here, which is fascinating. And lots of good news.
Yeah.
Good, interesting news in here. So I'm thrilled that you're there. It's great. Congratulations.
Me too.
Do you have a pick of the week for us?
Well, I wanted to mention, you probably talked about this on other shows.
I have not,
The
actually.
New Firefox browser.
In fact, I just installed
Quantum.
I've been using it. And what's interesting is people might not have noticed because I'm on a Microsoft Surface and it looks so much like Edge. They might have thought I was using Edge.
Does, yeah.
So what's new in Quantum?
The one thing I really noticed, it's fast. I haven't done a lot of research into the, supposedly it's a lot lighter in terms of data usage as well. So RAM and so on, but it's definitely fast. Loading, fast switching tabs. I don't know if you open routinely like 50 to 100 tabs, but I do. And Chrome can really get bogged down because each tab is a separate memory process. And so you find yourself basically running out of RAM. I could open fewer tabs, but I'm hoping that Firefox will be able to do that better and sort of keep the speed up. And so far, it's a nice browser. Certainly, speed wise, I'm impressed.
It is. It has the plugins I need. I'm a big Chrome user, but you're right. Chrome is a pig and also a battery hog on some platforms. And so I've been playing with this, and I really like it. And it supports the at least two extensions I really need, which were LastPass and uBlock Origin, the ad blocker. But there's a lot more. Built into it, and you can see all the add-ons in the add-on store, and they have, I would say, parity probably with Chrome in terms of extensions.
I think they're close.
Yeah.
Yeah, there might be some things that they don't have that people want. But.
So is it the same standard? Is it, can it, like a Chrome extension easily be ported over?
Yes. I mean, basically, it used to be extensions were binaries and weird. Now they're JavaScript, and you just need to wrap them slightly differently and you run them on both. So
nice.
They've done the work to converge it.
Okay. So as people, more and more people
and
use
it's interesting.
This. Go ahead.
It's interesting that Firefox, you can use Google as your default search engine again.
That's a big change,
You couldn't before because they did that big deal with Yahoo. But they've apparently walked away from that deal. And
very smart.
Before it was up, like it was a 5-year deal, but they walked away before the deal was up. So now they're back with Google.
Nice. Well, I'm going to try it out for a while. Firefox Quantum, it's Firefox 57, free download from firefox.com. And I'll tell you one thing, it looks nice. It really is. And it does.
Yeah.
It feels faster. So, yeah, very nice. How about you, Mr. Kevin Marks, a pick for us?
I've got a couple of things. I mean, I'll go with the less obvious one first, which is Shortcut. So Shortcut is a tool that was built by a bunch of people I know for This American Life. And then what they want to do is let people share parts of their show.
Oh, we need this. So,
yeah, no, you like this. But it needs transcripts. This is your challenge. You have to have transcripts for this to work. So basically, you select some text in the transcript, and it constructs a little movie for you to share on social media.
Nice.
My gosh.
That's super handy.
So now it's open source, which is fantastic.
Which means you can install it on your own podcast network. But if you have a podcast network, yeah, Leo. So if you go to the second link I put in there, shortcutthisamericanlife.org, you can pick the show, you can select some text in it, it constructs this nice little movie from it.
Wow.
So select some text on that page.
So this is the transcript. So that's one thing, we'd have to have a transcript.
And then it constructs the video for you.
Yeah.
That matches the transcript and plays
it even plays the text. It's audio only, so it's not it's not a GIF of the video, because we do video.
It's close to your use case. You could work on this and talk to the guys, but the point is, it then generates this is the interesting thing for me, is that sharing audio clips is quite hard. Sharing video clips is easy, so they make a video clip from your audio clip, and that's what you share.
It's always been a challenge for us because. And having the text is also good, because this could be on a Facebook page or a Twitter feed, and people wouldn't have to turn on the audio or anything. They could read it. This has always been an issue for us.
So this was, they worked with the use case that they had, which was This American Life actually transcribes all their shows, and they did the work to sync them up. So which means you can do this. But the challenge is, for other podcasts, is you've got to do the transcription work. But once you do that, you get this nice ability to share it.
I wish more of them had transcripts. I find I don't have time to listen to a lot of the podcasts that I'd like to listen to, but I would read them.
You know, we paid for transcripts for a few of the shows for a long time, and our analytics told us nobody ever looked at them.
Really?
So we just recently stopped, of course. It's expensive. To get good transcripts is expensive.
Oh, no, it is expensive.
Yeah. And synchronization is also hard. I mean, that seems like a throw machine learning at it problem to me, but...
Yeah.
Well, you've seen the machine transcripts on YouTube and stuff. They're not very...
Yeah, they're terrible.
They're not very good.
But it's a starting point.
They haven't thrown the sort of recurrent neural networks
resources and stuff at them. Right.
So I can see that coming.
Yeah. Okay, I like it. Fieldtrain.com. And you could find out more about that. You've got an indie web camp coming up in Austin.
The first one in Austin, which is great, because Austin is a great place to go for conferences. It's coming up in December, which I think is still comfortable there.
Oh, Austin's nice year-round.
December 9th and 10th, Well, it gets a little chilly, but it's okay. It's still a good city. So sign up for that. Go along. I wish I could go. I'm going to be in the UK in December the 9th and 10th, but...
IndieWeb.org to find out more. IndieWeb Camp. And when you get to IndieWeb, there's a lot of other great resources for keeping the web open and free and independent of the big companies, including the Homebrew website, the IndieWeb Camp meetings, and lots of
there is
tools.
Actually one in San Francisco tonight. If you're, I think you can still get to that.
Okay. Yeah, no, it's only, it's but not
you,
even
you
four.
Could, if you want to drive south.
I could run out of here and go. Ladies and gentlemen, I thank you. I especially thank our host. Jeff Jarvis had to run, but of course he is always on the show, and we love Jeff, you'll find his blog at buzzmachine.com, his books online, including What Would Google Do?, Private Parts, Geeks Bearing Gifts, and he's a professor of journalism. If you're lucky enough to be in the Graduate School of Journalism at CUNY, you'll probably have some encounters with Mr. J. We thank him for joining us. Of course, Kevin Marks at IndieWeb.org. In the middle of the night in Amsterdam, in a plain clothes. I don't know. I ran out of words.
I'm at a health data conference. I mean, that's...
Health data conference. Well, you better get your sleep because you don't want to drift off tomorrow morning. Thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate it, Kevin. Also, Matthew Ingram, really great to welcome you. The first time since you took your new job at the Columbia Journalism Review. You can find out more about him at MatthewIngram.com, MatthewIngram. He's also Matthew I on the Twitter. Thank you, Matthew. We do Twig.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure. We do Twig every Wednesday afternoon, 1:30 p.m., 4:30, that's 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 2130 UTC. If you want to tune in and say hi, join us at twit.tv/live, or you could ask your Echo. You could say, Echo, listen to Twit Live on TuneIn any time of the day or night, actually. If you do that, though, fire up your browser and go to irc.twit.tv and join us in the chat room. It's always a good conversation, glossing everything we say on the show. And I'm watching it at all times. I always get lots of good ideas from the chat room. If you can't watch live or be in studio live, by the way, you just email tickets at twit.tv. We'd love to have you in studio. You can always get the shows after the fact. All of our programs are made available on demand, both audio and video, at twit.tv. In the case of this, it's twit.tv/twig. And you can also subscribe. In fact, that's my preferred way. If you want to listen, find your favorite podcast app and subscribe. That way, whenever you've got some free time, you can listen at your leisure to This Week in Google. Thanks for being here. And we'll see you next time on Twig. Bye-bye.